The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Beyond and hello and welcome once again to IGN's number one PlayStation show most weeks of the year. I'm Max Scoville, I'm your host, and I'm joined today by Jada Griffin.
Hello, hello.
John Davison.
Hello.
And Josh Du. We got the three J's here. Two of
Hi.
Them are JDs. Thank you all for joining me. We've got a fun show planned for today. We got some cool stuff to talk about. And by cool stuff, I mean theoretically kind of sad stuff, because E3 isn't happening. This is sort of a thing we kind of expected. We're not really hugely surprised by that. But that said, we do want to kind of look back at some of our fondest, weirdest, et cetera, PlayStation-related E3 memories. But we're also going to talk a little bit about two of the Souls-likes that are coming down the pike later this year or in the near future, a Ninja Turtles game that kind of low-key got announced, and whatever else we have time for. But without further ado, let's talk about some E3 stuff. John, part of the reason I had you join us is because you are a bit of an industry veteran, and you've seen some shit.
I've seen some shit. So when E3 was at its heyday, I was running EGM, and then I was running the official PlayStation magazine. So a lot of my memories of E3 are very PlayStation related. So the two, it's funny. Like my favorite E3 moment of all time was at my least favorite E3. So in 97 and 98, which is how long ago we're talking, it was in Atlanta for some reason. And it was hot as balls and like sweaty and nasty and horrible. And Sony that year, so they were, you know, like the PlayStation was what, not even 4 years old yet. So I was there and I was hanging out with Chris Van Der Kool, who now runs a studio that maintains Minecraft alongside Mojang. Mm. And his studio's in Scotland, and there's an organization called the Scottish Game Alliance. And they would go to E3, and they would be in full Scottish regalia, kilts, sporrans, the works. So my last meeting of the day, on the day of... Sony used to have these huge, just like epic parties at E3. And he was my last meeting of the day before the Sony party. And he's like, oh, do you want to come with me and we'll go to the party together? So he has a limo pick him up and takes us. And the Sony party this year was, it was a 5 or 6 story parking lot that they'd wrapped in like white silk or something. So it looked like a big white cube in the middle of Atlanta. And they were sort of laser projecting PlayStation logos all out of it. We get there a little late and we step out of the limo, and it's starting to get a little bit dark, and there's like fireworks going off. And Chris just looks at me, and his like strong Scottish accent is just like, I fucking love my job. And like, so this party also went on to being, the Foo Fighters were playing on the roof of this parking garage. And halfway through the set, they'd been like giving, it was the year Parappa came out, they'd been giving out Parappa beanies. Dave Grohl pulls on a Parappa beanie and starts playing the Chop Chop Master Onions.
No!
What?
And it was just one of those like, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening type moments. And it was kind of like, that was kind of at the peak extravagance and peak just crazy shit.
I can't imagine how that might have not been, you know, budgetarily a reasonable thing to do. To book a parking garage and wrap it in silk and then have
Sony
the
used to spend, I mean, literally millions on these things. Mm-hmm. Like every floor of the parking lot was themed with different food. So there was like a sushi floor and a barbecue floor and and then they would have like DJs playing in areas, and then the roof was like this big gig, and
Dave Grohl was like the last.
That was my favorite E3 moment. Also, I have fond memories of that because like that night, I was hanging out with the person that I eventually married. So it's a bit of my marriage origin story is at that event. But that E3 was horrible. But that night was fantastic.
It reminds me of like the Fortnite party that they threw maybe a few years ago now. Oh, it was just so extravagant. They had like Logic performing for free as well, and it was just massive.
What's that? That was like the USC like stadium or something.
Like it was like the Rose Bowl or something like that.
If we knew sports, I feel like we'd know what that building is.
It happened around it, which was weird. Inside of it.
I got into Fortnite super late, and I keep thinking about that party and trying to remember details about it because I remember they had like slurp juice booths everywhere, and I was like, what the hell is slurp juice? And now I'm like, I wish I remembered that party. Sit on me.
It was the closest thing to like a Fortnite theme park. It was, if you can imagine, just they have the IP to make a Fortnite theme park, and that was as close as they ever got. And like, if they ever make it a real thing, I'm there for sure. It was awesome.
Now, Josh, you've got to run around and see some very weird stuff because you've done a lot of like social videos and things like that. Do you have any specific PlayStation related memories?
There weren't really like, I wouldn't say like PlayStation specific. It was a lot of me. It's all a blur, honestly. When I was spending time at E3, I was shooting a lot of videos where I was playing a character that either owned E3 or was the son of the owner of E3. none of which are real, I think. I just ran around a lot and interacted with a lot of people who didn't know why this dude was running around in a bathrobe with a camera. But
what was the worst reaction you got? Did anyone just like take it way too seriously, or
some people just didn't get the joke, which is really interesting. There's a guy who was like decked out in like a custom Pac-Man suit. And I was like trying to play as a very rich person. I was like, oh, whoa, I like your suit. Where'd you get that, Armani? And he was just like, huh? What? But that's the gist of it, yeah.
Nice.
A lot of weird reactions.
I have one other story from the following year, 1999.
Okay.
I had to call some people this weekend to recall this night properly.
I feel like this one's going to be special.
It was weird. Okay. So you'll have to forgive all the names that I'm going to drop. And this is actually one of the things I missed about E3. Used to be this very close-knit thing, and as you'll see from the story, the kind of mix of people that you would get during E3, mm-hmm. like, doesn't really happen anymore. So, there was another Sony party, and so there are sort of, like, flashes of memory. I remember Kutaragi introducing Beck, who was playing the Sony party, and Kutaragi clearly didn't know who Beck was. Then, somehow, I ended up on a golf cart with Kutaragi and Phil Harrison and Zoe Flower, who was the host of Electric Playground at the time. And then we end up in a limo again, going to an after party that was hosted by Alan Yu, who used to run GDC. He would do these sweet parties at GDC, and he decided to do one at E3. So we go to this hotel, and we all roll up. Kutaragi disappears. I have no idea where he went. So we go into this party, and then the hotel management shuts the party down and says, you can't do this in a room, you can't get drunk and be loud and boisterous. So we end up in in hotels, they have these sort of like giant ballroom function rooms, sometimes in the basement. Mm-hmm. So we're in a ballroom function room downstairs with crates of booze, and there's like Phil Harrison, Ed Freese from Microsoft, I think Cliff Bleszinski was there.
Sounds like,
and it's a gigantic empty room with like maybe 50 people in it that have been like thrown out of a party in a hotel room. And there's so much space, and everyone's been drinking so much by this point, it's like, well, we should do some like races or something, right? There's a lot of room. So we end up doing wheelbarrow. You know what wheelbarrow races are, when you hold someone's feet and they run along on their arms?
Yeah.
So like Phil Harrison's like 7 feet tall, and people like grabbing Phil Harrison's ankles while he's like running along on his hands, and then like the Microsoft team are there, and like, and it was all these people from these competing companies just hanging out and drinking and having a good time together. And that's not I mean, it was 24 years ago. Mm-hmm. It's not the kind of thing that happens anymore. But back then, you would get that kind of mix of people.
It's like, for sure, pre-social media.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. God, yeah. Like, I mean, no rules, people would not do it now just for fear of there being photos of it, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I just love that, like, that is, you know, you get this crazy video game spending where it's like, yeah, sure, book out a castle, book out, like, a stadium, book out a parking mm-hmm. garage. And then it's also like, somebody put a car down. Let's get a conference room and do wheelbarrow racing.
Yeah,
like, let's.
Someone go out and get some booze.
I want. I want to know how the 7 foot person ended up being the person's legs being held and not the other way around. Like, how did that?
I mean, it was just. Look, I don't. My memory is very vague of it. I don't remember. Pear might have been there. I'm pretty sure Doug Perry might have been there, who used to be on IGN years ago. There was a lot of people in this room, but my sort of enduring memory is because, like, there were a lot of these kinds of things, and it was you had. There were these, like, omnipresent people in gaming, right? There was Phil Harris and Andrew House at PlayStation. There would be Ed Fries and Seamus and the guys from Microsoft. There'd be, you know, like, Peter Moore, who I think would have been at Sega at the time, and Bernie Stoll, and all these people that were, like, these figureheads of the industry. And they would... You would see everyone hanging out and drinking together and partying together and doing stuff, which is not a thing that you see in these more public forums anymore. It happens mm-hmm. a little bit at DICE or at, like, GDC, but this was like, it was, I mean, we were all a lot younger then, I mean, yeah. And the industry was a lot younger then as well, and it was a little bit like, well, there's nothing else like this, and, like, we're the only people doing it. There was a lot of making it up as you go along.
Well, it's also, that was when, like, Microsoft didn't have a console then. There was what, like, gaming for Windows at that
yeah.
point?
Yeah, and then it was, like, very early
Sidewinder,
days.
Like...
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, Xbox came out in, what, 2000, right?
2001?
Yeah.
2000 or 2001, yeah.
So, yeah, they had a presence there, obviously, but, like, that was when they were like, hey, check, we DirectX. Sure, why not? Like, yeah. You know, there wasn't any console war in that department quite yet. And, I mean, I feel like Nintendo has a curfew or something. Like, they're not...
they didn't hang out much.
Shots.
You know, to your point, John, yeah, like, I think my first E3 was 2014, and I met so many, like, great friends there, and, like, that's the thing I think I'm going to miss most about E3 is these gatherings of these people that I don't get to see that work at all these different companies that are just together for E3 and to go out, party, have a good time, catch up, and then go on our merry way until next E3 or, you know, if they were at Gamescom, see them at Gamescom again. Yeah. Like you, I also met my partner at E3. I think it was E3 2017. It was at the IGN 20th anniversary party.
Little did you know, E3, great for meeting future spouse.
It is the most romantic event that happens in the LA Convention Center. You know, aside from the National Bridal Convention. I'm kidding. It's not all romantic.
Yeah. But yeah, no, it was a great party. I love the 20th anniversary. Like, it was funny because we had met probably, I don't know, 2-3 months prior, and then didn't speak again. And I met Josh about 2 months prior as well. Mm-hmm. And then I walk into the party and I hear my name, Jada. And I was like, I look around and I see somebody standing behind the red velvet rope in this little corner of the VIP section of the IGN party. I was like, who is that? Completely had forgotten him. And then I was like, but you know what? He's in the VIP section. I'm going to go say hi. Just kind of refresh my memory. We ended up spending the whole freaking night together. We danced because there was like a dance floor where we had, I think Grimecraft was DJing that night. And then there was a bunch of like game consoles set up. So I kicked his ass in GoldenEye, Smash Brothers, and Mario Kart. I held no prisoners, even though he had never played on a Nintendo 64. I didn't care.
A relationship built on domination.
It is, 100%.
This one's always are.
Yes. Yeah. But, you know, he was a good sport about it. And, you know, we had a great time. And then we ended up hanging out the whole next day, like while walking the floor and working. Then I went to the karaoke bar where the karaoke party for IGN the next night, and that's where many IGN people have seen my legendary performance of Maya, My Name Is Like Whoa, which was a spectacle to behold. Thankfully there was no video or pictures of this, but it was a great performance from what I can recall from my, you know, my haze of E3.
Yeah, obviously, like a lot of E3 is sort of the charm of being there is like schmoozing, network stuff, getting to know people, getting to meet people. But like, we should talk a little bit about sort of the official presence.
Yes.
And like, one thing that Sony frequently did, varying degrees of success, was like the big presentation, you know, and that was a staple since the very first E3, where they were like just casually like, the PlayStation will be $300. Bye. You know, and that was when Sega Saturn immediately fell on its face. But like that, you know, back then that was like a one of those downstairs hotel conference rooms. Like that wasn't a huge big theater. And then fast forward, I don't know, 20 years, and you've got like one of the last big things they did was for Days Gone. They had fake corpses hanging from the ceiling, which were actually real people, but they weren't dead. And so people thought they were like just upside down zombie decorations. And they started playing
they were Days real Gone. People.
And they started like flailing around. People, wow, like, people were just like, what the fuck?
Oh God,
what is going on here? And that was, I don't know. I think they also had like, you know, they had like a dude playing a flute for Ghost of Tsushima or like, you know, like a choir for God of War. Like they always did some crazy spectacular thing. And, you know, it was great. They broadcast all that. It was wild, but it was always so funny kind of, you know, there's what you see in the video, which is sort of curated, but then the behind the scenes stories of just like people reporting in live while this is happening and not really understanding what's going on because they're sort of too close to it all. Like the last Sony E3 presentation was that one with it was The Last of Us one with the big kiss, and they had like the string lights everywhere, but they had a different room set up for each game that they presented.
Yeah.
And they had like the sort of the Jackson Last of Us setup, which kind of just looked like a chill like event space. And I think people got there and they were like, okay, so we're going to hang out here. They're probably going to do like a mixer afterwards or something, but they kept corralling people to the next thing. And then suddenly they're in like a weird, like, you know, Japanese bamboo garden or something. And there's like a dude playing the flute and they're like, what are we doing here? And the strangest thing about that, watching that, like I never got invited to these things. I was always working the stage or whatever. Same. And like between showing the actual like cool footage that, you know, front facing, they would cut back to like three people scrunched in at a desk, which is just like it was actually, I would feel like it was smaller than our studio desk. And we're just like, what are they okay there? And then it would cut back and it's some big crazy, you know, event space. But the people that were reporting directly to us would be like, I don't know where they're taking us. They're shuttling us down some weird hallway. And it was that kind of level of just, you know, hecticness. And it's not surprising that that kind of thing isn't really sustainable.
Yeah.
I feel like, especially like in the heyday of E3 when it was crazy.
A memorable, I can't remember where it was. So when Metal Gear Solid 2 was announced, they put us all in a, I don't know if you remember the original Metal Gear Solid 2 trailer is probably one of the all time great video game trailers of all time. It nailed like the sweet spot of the music to that game. It's like, and the whole trailer is building with the music. So they reveal it. We're in a movie theater. It's a bunch of press. And, you know, Kojima does his little thing and then the lights go down and they show the trailer and it does the thing and the choir comes in and like everyone is like, you know, the hair on the back of the neck is singing. Gets to the end of it. The whole room is totally silent. And then Sam Kennedy, who was the editor-in-chief of 1UP, who was one of the founders of 1UP, stands up and just goes, yes!
Yeah, that was one that I watched. I distinctly remember going, I was at summer camp and I'd have to like sneak off to the computer lab. And like there was no Wi-Fi, I didn't have a laptop. And I went to like the computer lab on one of those like classic cartoony fruit flavored IMAX. I was like going on IGN.com and watching like a QuickTime video of the trailer that is like, you know, the size of like a Polaroid iZone. Like it was just like the teeniest thing. And it was just so weird to like obsess over that. And that was like all we got. Like there was that trailer. That was the big reveal. And then I think there was another one kind of a little bit later on. And then the game came out and you're like, who is this blonde boy that we're playing as? Like, who is this? The greatest bait and switch ever.
I feel like that experience is like part of why like E3 kind of just became this highly desired event to go to, because it started off with like no photos, no cameras. Like you're telling us these stories about things that happen in a hotel basement, right? It's like, you don't really, nobody has access to that sort of thing. And like, then you have to go dig to the computer lab to find a tiny, tiny video. And like, I think as the years went on, like E3 just became way more accessible. Like there's so many cameras in there. Like you really could get an E3 experience without being at E3.
Well, I mean, you know, John, you start out in magazines. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
What was the turnaround like for E3 coverage? Was that trickled out over the course of like months?
It was about, if the timing was right, we'd get it into your hands about 6 weeks afterwards.
That's insane to me.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
And like, you've got time.
If the timing was bad, like if like it was in the wrong point in our cycle, it could be 2 months before you got the E3 stuff.
And if there's spillover, like you've got stories for the following issues after. Yeah. Like that's something that's kind of incomprehensible now.
Well, so we never, I mean, like, you know, like our experience over the last, what, 10, what, even, well, probably 20 years is that you go to E3 and you see the thing and you go back and you write it up, or you're on a stage and you point a camera at it. Back then it was like, you go and you keep notes and you've got discs and, I mean, sometimes 35 millimeter slides. And you're not doing any writing while you're there. You do it all when you get home. And then it's just making sure that you don't lose stuff, because there was no, you know, it's not on a server somewhere. It's like, it's literally, here's a, I mean, originally it was, here's a floppy disk. And then later it was, here's a CD.
The earlier E3s, they literally gave you floppy disks.
They would give us discs with screenshots that's on and, funny. You know, the press release file.
Oh, so like the floppy disk had like four photos on there for each floppy disk.
What's the weirdest piece of E3 swag you remember?
Oh man.
So we talk a lot about the promotional mailers that go out, but I feel like E3 swag is something that
I don't remember if this was E3, but it was a Ninja Gaiden. It was officially cutlery, but it was a circular thing, but it had three curved blades that folded out of it that were very, very sharp. So when it was open, it looked like a giant throwing star.
That's cool.
And it had a belt clip on it, but you know. Because, you know, when you need
right.
three-bladed... Going on the plane.
When you need your three-bladed knife.
Show it off.
I feel like that, weirdly, is one of those things that skirts California penal code. Where like, shuriken, yes. Absolutely not. A very long blade, no. But, like, a round pocket knife, why not? It's a multi-tool. What could go wrong? No, that's so much fun to think about. But, I mean, yeah, to your point about the turnaround time there, that's a big part of the reason that E3 is going away. Is like, right. What is the appeal of this big physical event when you can just, you know, turn on a Twitch stream? Like, this stuff can all be, I'm not even done remotely. It's just do it on your own terms and like control the messaging. It's a bummer. And I think there is that, like, I think part of the reason it failed specifically this year in really kind of was circling the drain for a minute is like, there's this Charlie and the Chocolate Factory effect where like there was this mysterious thing that like people weren't allowed to go into, and gradually more and more, like as we saw the sort of rise of, you know, bloggers and YouTubers and stuff like that, more and more people just got to go to E3, where previously it was like this very like cut off industry only exclusive thing. You need a golden ticket and you need to get there. Like back in the day, it used to be like a lot stricter getting people in there. And there was even a stretch there where I think websites were like kind of iffy. You know, it was like, if you're a print publication, no problem. But if you have a website, or is it a real website, or is it a blog? What's the deal? Mm-hmm. Like Destructoid, which is in odd states these days, but that's, you know, where I started out. And the origin story there is Nero Gonzalez, who founded the site, wanted to go to E3. I think he had his 30th birthday. He was working in graphic design, doing advertising stuff that he hated. And he was having this sort of quarter life crisis and was like, he's going to live to be 120. it was just sort of like, I need to go to E3. I want to do this. And so he made a robot helmet, started Destructoid just for the sake of, he's like, this is Destructoid. It's a website about video games. He made this character, Mr. Destructoid, and went to E3 and was like, this is like, he created the publication for the sake of sending himself to this thing, which is, it's a lot of legwork to falsify some credentials. Mm-hmm. And then that turned into an actual thing. And then it became a actual website that actually covered things. And that's wound up sending jackasses like me there to cover it. But yeah, I'll start with like, you know, robot cosplay and wanting to just make that jump from amateur to professional, and somehow worked out.
It's crazy.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of any specifically weird E3 stuff.
I don't know about anything specifically weird, but I mean, we can talk about like the booths. Like booths are a big part of E3. Like you'd go and you'd be like, What did Nintendo do this year? What did they recreate? You know, the years when they were talking about Breath of the Wild, like it was such a huge year.
It is deeply unsurprising that they pivoted into theme parks immediately after doing that. It was like, I mean, the last few we saw was what, like Link's Awakening?
Link's Awakening. They had an Animal Crossing one, I believe. I think they did Luigi's Mansion one year.
It was a great fit.
They
did a great job with that. I remember that was my first E3. It was the Breath of the Wild one, and it was
so cool,
insane.
Yeah,
yeah. And the funny thing, they also had, I think it was whatever year they basically started allowing fans there. We were next door to this, and I think I've told this story before, but it's one of my favorite E3 memories, and it's one of those things I wish we had on tape because I would watch it repeatedly all the time. We had this giant plexiglass acrylic fish tank set up for our studio set.
Oh, I remember
and,
that.
You know, we had the cameras in there, and if you walked by, you could sort of see us doing dev interviews and stuff. And the entryway was sort of on the opposite side, like of the booth. So you walked in from one side, you could look straight from the entryway look across and see through the plexiglass Nintendo's booth. Mm-hmm. And you know when like birds fly into windows? a human boy did that to the inside of our studio. And he saw Nintendo in front of him and he just booked it straight in and just went... Just clear across our studio. And we hadn't started rolling yet, so we were just like, what? Man. What was that? And he just like just creamed himself in the wrong expression. He just got that came later when he got to do a Kirby game or whatever. I don't know. But no, he just went and it was, I think everyone was like, dude, are you okay? And he just like dusted himself up and just like, where's Nintendo? I gotta go meet Wario or whatever, and just looked it out of there. It was just like, I mean, I play it out in my head. I was like, this is too good. This is too amazing. But
I'm bummed. Like the last E3 I went to is like, I felt like it was starting to like video games were starting to just get really mainstream, and mm-hmm. That was the year Jack Black was there. Mm. Like he was just, I heard he'd been roaming around. We saw him like. Through the glass or something, and like I should have said this as my E3 story earlier, but like I was filming a thing where I was playing the son of the owner of E3, and I was like, we were at the top of the escalator near the food court, and I was like, all right, let's wrap it up, we're about to do the last shot. And then I look down the escalator, I see Jack Black and his team coming up, and I'm like, start rolling right now. And I just like got into character and I was like, dude, yeah, E3 is crazy. We get a bunch of celebrities here. And I timed it and I was like waiting to see like Jack Black come up in the corner of my eye. And I'm like, and look, Jack Black's right there. It's great. All the celebrities are here. But he didn't hear me say it. So I had to turn around and be like, hey, Jackie. And he's just like, the fuck is this? Just like kept
walking. There was one year where like fairly recently where they were like, Kanye is here. And he really wants to talk to Miyamoto.
Oh, I heard about this.
And it was, everyone's like, what? And it was one of those things where they're just like, clear out everybody. Like, Kanye's coming. He's got to talk. He wants to pitch the game about his grandmother going to heaven or something, which I think eventually came out as like a mobile game, or an NFT or something. But
I think it was his mom. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a weird premise. As for the PlayStation booth, I feel like it was always a little more controlled. Mm-hmm. Like it was fairly clean cut. This isn't specifically an E3 memory, but it was a booth memory at, I think it was GDC, the year when the PS4 and the Xbox One were about to come out. And this was shortly after like the Xbox One had come out, and it was Don Matrick had been like, you can use it to watch ESPN. You like TV, right? And everyone's like, what are you doing? And this was, you know, that it comes with a giant Kinect the size of your soundbar. It's great, right? And everyone's very mad at Xbox at that point. And the PS4 was like, yeah, this seems pretty cool. Okay. Their booths were right next to each other. And like, you know, you're walking on a show floor. It's exhausting. Your feet hurt. It sucks. And Sony's was like really cushy. You're like, oh, wow, it's so soft here. It's nice. You're like walking around playing the games. You're like, all right, great. I guess I'll go check out what they got going on over at Xbox. And you walk like 5 feet and it's like harder floor than the actual convention center floor. I don't know what they got, some kind of like Formica plexiglass stuff, and you walked on it. It sounded like you were walking on like a cartoon stage. Like it was just, and it was just like, I just remember being like, my feet hurt from standing on this for five. Like, are they trying to make me not play Xbox One games right now? But they turned themselves around. I think they got better cushioning at the next event or whatever. But
yeah.
That was just a weird
Sony kind of always
comparison.
Had nice carpets, though. It was always like that. Like, they had, like, it's a weird thing to say, but yeah, Sony had great carpets.
I was not paying attention to the carpet.
A big part of me, so I did a lot of previews and stuff. So most of my day for E3s was running from appointment to appointment for 8 to 10 hours straight.
Yeah.
Literally every 30 to 45 minutes, I had a separate appointment. And so I was sometimes going back and forth between the two halls. And whenever I got a chance to take a break and like kind of go in, like, or go play something on the showroom floor, I was like always made sure to have a Sony one somewhere in the middle so I could like relax on their carpet because it was so soft. It was like, it was cushions. It's a really weird thing to enjoy, but I mean, it's the little things that matter sometimes for a booth experience. And you know, that was one of them for me. It's a weird thing, but yeah.
I can't picture it. You like asked me like, what are my PlayStation E3 experience? I was like, I can't remember what any of their booths looked like. It was probably blue. Like that was the only thing I could really remember. But my first E3, like I got to go close doors for like the God of War preview when they first like revealed that. And I was like a contractor at this point. Like I'd been working here for like a month and a half and like wasn't really getting paid, I think. But I came out of the room and they're like, hey, we're going to interview everybody on what they thought of the preview. I was like, oh, cool. And I was like, I'm going to be in an IGN video. And then the video came out and my entire bit was cut. I don't know. I remember that very specifically.
Yeah, thinking back, we also used to have like the IGN War Room, which was just this institution. And I feel like there's all these different horror stories about places where it was set up over the years. And the one we kept going back to was this like studio space in downtown LA, like a few blocks from the convention center. And it was what it was used for when E3 wasn't happening was always open to interpretation. But there would be like very weird suggestive cushions. There was a giant chair that looked like a shiny high-heeled shoe. And everyone's like, they shoot
a suggestive cushion.
Like, you know, like just a cushion where like, what do people do on these cushions?
Like, this doesn't look comfortable to sit on.
We were all like pretty, like there was a, you know, like a green room makeup room and it just had like, I forget if it actually had like adult film stars pinned up on the wall, but it was very clear. Like, I think they do some adult filmmaking here. You know, yeah. I think they'd have some. And then there's stories about like other outlets that had even like skeevier like locations they shot at. I think Giant Bomb had one that was infamously like, they're like, don't sit on that couch. That couch has seen some stuff. But no, it was always like a trip, and you'd get everyone kind of crowded in there, and we'd be up at, you know, we'd be working very long days, and because we're doing, you know, studio shooting, we'd just have like blackout curtains everywhere. And so you'd come from like the sweltering bright LA sun, and you'd go in this like giant air-cooled warehouse basically that was pitch black. And then we'd all kind of crowd around and we'd watch the big presentations. And like, I feel like it was the Death Stranding reveal that was like my last really big, like, we're all like running on adrenaline and caffeine and probably a hangover, and like just Norman Reedus like get butt naked on a beach full of crabs and being like, Kojima's back. I'm like, what is he doing? Here we are years later. And I'm like, I think I understand that game. I want to play the next one. But like, that went from being this is the most like, just things I'd never seen before. I didn't really know I wanted to see Norman Reedus naked on a beach covered in crude oil or whatever that was. But, you know, I was like, okay, sure, sign me up, you know? That was the most excited I was about an E3 trailer since probably the, you know, Metal Gear Solid 2 one, which was also a big deal. But
yeah, I missed, like, watching those, like, reveals live with, like, a group of people. Like, just having that energy when, like, certain things got announced or revealed was just, like, unreal. Especially, like, for somebody who, like, wasn't following E3 very much before like joining IGN, I was just like, dude, this is hype. Like, this is sick. And the War Room was not always super cooled. It was just, sometimes it was very hot.
It was a warm room.
Yeah, it was a warm room. Yeah.
Well, they'd pipe in air conditioning, and then they'd also bring in like giant hot platters full of like hot meats. Everyone crowd around and eat the big hot, get like a big hot pasta plate, and then don't fall asleep for 7 hours.
It was crazy.
Yeah. No, I've had some good times doing that, and I don't know. I'm gonna miss E3 on that level. It's just weird to hear it's not happening, and it has kind of fragmented and splittered. And I'm curious to see how it kind of shakes out. We're obviously gonna have plenty of coverage around the various summer events that are happening. I don't want to be totally fatalist about it. There's gonna be some really cool stuff coming out. Sony they're gonna do something this summer, presumably, or maybe later on, whenever they feel like.
Run out of things for us to get excited about, right? We know the Spider-Man, and that's
Wolverine.
Maybe.
They could show like a Wolverine teaser image on social media for the next like 14 years, and I'd be like, I want to play Wolverine. Like, it could be complete vaporware, but
animated one of his comics.
Yeah, like, I don't know.
Be great.
Yes.
I'd be into it. I do hope we get to see more Spider-Man very soon, because that seems like it's right around the corner. Mm-hmm. Something else that's right around the corner, is a couple of very cool looking Souls-likes, whatever you want to call them. Elden Ring's DLC seems like it's probably a ways off. I think we're going to need something to hold us over until that finally drops. And two games have kind of caught my attention. One is Remnant 2, and the other is Lords of the Fallen. And the first one, Remnant 2, we have an IGN first up about that. Travis Northup got to play it. He came away extremely into it. JD, you played a bit of the first one, right?
I played a crap ton of the first one. So Remnant's like the Souls-like third-person shooter with like abilities and stuff like that, fighting off all these different like...
It's Dark Souls with guns.
That's what
the community calls it.
Yeah, and so like it's one of those games where like... So they give you like different difficulty settings, and they want you to start on the first difficulty setting because the enemies are like level based. So their stats adjust based on the difficulty you play on. I didn't realize that the first time I played through it, or I ignored it and played on the hardest difficulty right off the bat. Because also that's just what I do. It's just habit for me. And I was playing it with my partner co-op, and it was so challenging playing through it. I felt like it felt like it gave me the actual like true Souls experience, because like I have to be perfect. I have to dodge these shots. I have to take cover. I have to heal at the proper times. I have to manage my ammo. There's a lot of stuff to it, and like some of the bosses are just so over the top. I remember we got stuck at this one boss early on for like 2 weeks. Because he could just teleport around and he kept summoning endless people. And so we were like, we had to learn all the teleport points.
So that's one thing that Travis said the second one fixes is the bosses are less prone to just summoning minions and just dropping them on you, which is very good to hear.
Yes. But yeah, it's just really, it's a very solid, it's got a great challenge. Like, you know, one of the other things he was talking about in the previews is how a lot of the environments are more varied, because that was one of my biggest criticisms with it. Is like, besides like the swamp and then like the DLC areas, it all got kind of like, oh, we're in this area with this kind of like, you know, demon vines and stuff that are everywhere and covering everything.
What are we looking at here? Is this two?
This is two. This is the second one.
And is the first one? I never played the first one. Mm-hmm. I can guess from the footage, but what's the setting and the backstory?
I played a bit of it, and I have no idea. I think it's post-apocalyptic, but it's like so far in the post-apocalypse.
But he's wearing a jaunty cowboy hat.
He's got a jaunty cowboy. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you could. So like, yeah, it's post-apocalyptic, and like basically this like alien vine type thing is coming over, and it's started corrupting the land and stuff like that. And so you're fighting back this corruption, and there's all these different like corrupted beasts that you're fighting that take different forms as you're going through it. Yeah, it's a video game.
Okay.
I feel like it's very much like, it was like cool art direction first, story second. Yeah. You know, like that's
got it.
And it's also, I didn't realize it was procedurally generated. That feels like a pretty huge selling point for the first one.
Mm-hmm. It's a bit more roguelike than a Souls?
So yeah, it's a little So like even in the first one, playing through it, if you were, your world was separate from somebody else's, but your world was the same every time you entered your world.
Oh, your world is consistent, but your world and my world would be laid out the same.
Exactly. Different. We'd fight different bosses. So you'd like have to play through it multiple times to see all the different bosses, or play co-op with other people up to three players to see the different variations in the bosses. And sometimes the maps would be laid out a little bit differently.
But
once you got used to it and you're like, okay, I know what this area is. I know I'm going to it. I know what boss is going to be at the end here. For certain ones are set. Obviously some of them weren't. But yeah, and like, I forget the, like, I remember the ending was like, you were fighting some, like, you got sucked into like this like memory or inside of somebody's like consciousness, and you were fighting some big old demon inside someone's consciousness from somebody who was like in a coma or something.
Spoilers,
like that.
Maybe.
Yeah, it's spoilers. But I mean, it's, the game's like, I don't know, 7 years old now.
It's been out for a minute.
It's been out for a minute. And you know, there's definitely more to the story.
That was your ending. Someone else might have had a completely different.
Exactly. You know, maybe they give the person CPR and they woke them up out of the coma. Yeah. I just went in and shot the demon.
I messed with the first one a bit. I think it was on Game Pass or something, and I was like, oh, I'll check it out. Brian was singing its praises, and I messed around with it, and the jaunty cowboy hats didn't sit well with me. You know, maybe it was the angle that they were at, a bit too jaunty for my taste. I don't know. It felt good to play, but I wasn't really enamored with the world itself. Like, I didn't really want to spend time there, and it, you know, it was good enough to mess around with, but I wasn't sucked into it. The screenshots that dropped when we first showed off like the first one, or when it first popped up in a trailer, look like a different game entirely. They're so much more colorful. They're just
very brown.
Yeah, it's
brown and red.
The new one's gotten a lot. Yeah, there's the first one there. But like, the new one has like stuff that just, it looks like it would be at home in a FromSoft game. Like some of the creatures look much more interesting. And it's, I don't know, the description, like the variety of biomes you go see, which sounds cool, you know. And I think that does, having a variety of like procedurally generated stuff really does foster that kind of playground conversation that we get with, like, you know, and I mean, people went in different directions and saw different things in Elden Ring and came back and like, did you fight the big dog? Or no, I didn't fight the big dog. I fought the turtle or whatever you did in that game. And in this case, it's like you're actually experiencing entirely different things. So maybe you're going to see the same stuff at different points. But yeah, it remains to be seen. Another thing is, Travis was saying that there's a lot more build versatility, whereas the first one was kind of like, you know, you more or less pick a class and then just stack weapons on there. In this case, there's melee combat is an option. One guy has a dog. You can just make your dog fight for you, which seems a little bit inhumane, but, you know, I wouldn't make my dog fight like a giant Venus flytrap demon or whatever that thing is. But yeah, it seems like scratching that itch of wanting to like craft builds much mm-hmm. more. So that's cool. I think this is still slated for a 2023 release at some point, but it's not super far off and it looks like a damn good time. So I'm color me intrigued. I'm into it.
I'm hoping me and Brian can play some co-op together with this one when it drops, because I have a feeling we're going to have a lot of fun with this one.
Maybe I can like sit in the back and like hide behind a tree.
You can play the character yeah. with the dog and just have the dog come and help us. Yeah.
Play the dog. Just play as the dog.
Yeah. That'd be good. I'd be
just
in
have the have that controller next to Brian, just unplugged. And
The other game that I'm really into is Lords of the Fallen. Not mm-hmm. the original, because that one was, I don't know, people were so-so on that one.
It was mm-hmm. messy.
Yeah, it was a big, grim, dark, medieval fantasy type thing, which
I think was a PS4 launch title as well. Like, or
very early.
It was very early into the PS4. So, like, it was one of those ones that was like, it's like, we're learning how to code, how to program and make games for the PS4 kind of type things, which is normal for everything. We got that with PS5 with what, the God game, God's Fall. It was like the Gearbox, the Borderlands.
Godfall.
Godfall. Thank you.
Godfall, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, you know, you get those types of games every generation, and this was Lords of the Fallen was kind of that one. So, yeah, but the new one looks great.
This one was announced as The Lords of the Fallen. They're kind of doing like a The Suicide Squad kind of thing, but then they changed their minds and it's just called Lords of the Fallen, which is...
It feels a little bit like, please forget the last one. Yes. This is what we really meant to do.
100%.
But it sucks. There's only so many names in video games. You can only name things a certain amount of times. Sometimes you just got to use the same name. You got a hand-me-down name. But this game looks phenomenal. For starters, there's a really good write-up over on Eurogamer that has bits about how, like, it is the first one you played as the grizzly gruff man. I think you could adjust the, you know, stats and classes mm-hmm. and all that, but in this case it is like a full-on character creator. It is fairly robust. You can make your character as robust as you want them to be, and then of course there's a very cool demo, not demo, there's like a tech thing they put up to show off the sort of Unreal 5 of it all. And it looks really impressive. Again, that's focusing strictly on the
body shape, on
the visuals. You know, you can make
they showed it at the Epic showcase during GDC.
Yeah.
And I think the coolest thing is the transition between, I don't know, what is it, dimensions or whatever.
Oh, going from into the umbral world.
Yeah, there's this sort of other world that is like, that it's layered sort of,
yeah,
in terms of your perception, right on top of the existing world, and you can move between the two.
It's,
and like the look of the world just like morphs into like reality and then into this like twisted world and then back again.
It's like what H.R. Giger really sees when he closes his eyes. Like but that's I feel like that's the mechanic that really sets it apart from just being another, you know, another Souls-like. It's, you have the main world is called Axiom and the other hell world is called Umbral, and you have this little blue lantern, and when you hold it up, you can see what's happening in this other realm. And in many cases, there will be full-on different stuff happening there. Like, there will be enemies that aren't there normally. There'll be, like, you know, doorways, staircases, stuff that you can't access otherwise, which sounds just like a really cool exploration mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one of the key things they're focusing on with this game, which I'm into. But there's other little wrinkles in this, like, just little kind of casual mentions that just made my ears perk up in terms of, like, what this game is like to play. This episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by NordVPN, a great way to protect yourself online while also improving your overall experience while enjoying cyberspace. Are you tired of streaming shows, movies, or sporting events being unavailable in your region due to draconian restrictions that are based on completely arbitrary geographical boundaries in physical meat space? Well, switch your virtual location to a place where that's no longer an issue. The same goes for shopping. You can get the best possible deal on subscriptions, flights, hotels, and other goods and services like that from websites that like to play favorites with certain territories and currencies. Meanwhile, encrypted traffic protects your data from hackers, viruses, malware, phishing sites, and other harmful hitchhikers of the information superhighway. Though really, it's more of an information autobahn, because there is no speed limit with NordVPN. It is the fastest VPN in the world, so there won't be any buffering or lagging, and it'll stop your ISP from throttling your bandwidth. Isn't that nice? One NordVPN account can be used across 6 devices, which is great. My wife has been using our account to watch all sorts of awful British reality TV shows that aren't available here, like Argument Island or Half Naked Idiots Fall in Love, and everyone's favorite, The Worst People Just Got Married, Let's Hear Them Talk About It. Shows that are so bad they're blocked in our part of the world for our own good, but luckily, NordVPN allows her to trick the internet into thinking she's in the UK, so she and her awful friends can shriek and howl and cackle at the TV while I'm trying to relax. I've been using my VPN too. You know what I've been using it for? None of your business. Yep, that's right. And thanks to NordVPN, my data is safely encrypted, all bundled up in a weighted security blanket of incomprehensibly complex math problems, and nobody can tell what it's doing under there. Data, you do your thing. I'll leave you alone. 1 month of NordVPN coverage costs less than a cup of coffee. Coffee can't protect you from cybercriminals unless you throw it at them or pour it on their computers, and you'll probably get in trouble for doing that. So get NordVPN instead. To get the best possible discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/pobeyond. That link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Again, that is nordvpn.com/pobeyond. And now, back to the show.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am thrilled to invite you to Rachel Uncensored, my podcast where I get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. From personal stories to hot-button issues, we cover it all. New episodes drop every Wednesday, so make sure you tune in on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.
One thing is you have checkpoints, you have like campfires or whatever, and they're portable. So you can figure out where you want your respawn point to be. However, enemies can come over and like kick dirt on your campfire or whatever, or break your little lantern. Like they can come over and like wreck your save point.
Yep.
So you'll have to go even further back to wherever your last one was or whatever. None of this has been like...
And they said those are expensive too. They said it's expensive to craft these save points. So
yeah, so you gotta be careful where you decide to like, you know, you cannot sleep when there are enemies nearby or whatever. But the thing is, when you die... You first start out in the Umbral world. Mm-hmm. Like you have like kind of a two-phase death where like you, which reminds me of what Death Stranding was sort of doing, where you would like die and you'd be a fish for a second or whatever. You just sort of swim around and then I don't know what the deal was with that. But in this case, you wind up in this like blue hellscape.
Great summary of Death Stranding.
Yes.
You're a fish and then I don't know, you go home, whatever. Build a catapult. But you wind up in this sort of this Umbral realm. And I guess you have to work your way back to your body or your soul or another passageway to get back into the Axiom realm. But it sounds cool. And if you die in there, and I guess that, you know, as you'd expect from like a arcane hell realm, it's a little bit scarier in the Blue Lantern realm, you know, so like there's more enemies. One thing that is another added wrinkle to that is that there's apparently like a cowardice meter. And there's like a little eye on the screen, and if you avoid battle too much, it'll slowly open. And I don't know what happens if you are just like too much of a coward. If they
the game mocks you.
The game, like my understanding from reading on it was as the eye gets more and more open, like the enemies become more powerful and stronger. So the more you run away from enemies or hide or do whatever, so
it's like you're like, pissing it off.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. It's like, hey, you need to be aggressive. You need to stand your ground. Otherwise, we're going to penalize you.
I absolutely like, I love the idea of it. I know I will hate it in practice.
Oh God, I'm going to hate it in practice. It sounds amazing.
Yeah. I mean, that's what like kicked me off of Demon's Souls is what like, it was like world states or whatever.
When you died. And
if you die enough times, these just like red skeletons show up and start beating your ass, and you're like, I didn't like what, I suck at the game, so they're gonna make
it's harder.
Gonna
suck.
Yeah, what is the incentive here? Like, I mean, it's honestly the same logic as like bank overdraft fees. It's like, you don't have any money, so give us some money. Yeah. Like, thanks, dude. I'm extremely excited about what they've talked about.
I do have to say, I think it's one of the best looking games I've ever seen from the footage. I mean, it looks unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Look at it.
Unbelievable, even.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Yes. No, I mean, like, it's weird to get such a sort of deep dive in an Unreal 5 tech demo while I don't think we've really seen a proper...
Yeah, I think this might be one of the first sort of real, this is Unreal 5 firing on all cylinders kind of game.
I hope it delivers. They have a part in there which also feels like a almost like targeted harassment, because there's a character there that's like basically Bloodborne with a Morning Star. Like, there's just somebody with like a little tri-cornered hat and like feather armor. And then they, you know, they're swinging around this thing, and they zoom the camera, and it's like, you can check out the individual thread count of this tunic. It's like, that looks cool. It'd be nice if someone at Sony did something like that with somebody wearing a little feathered cape and some tri-cornered hat. It'd be kind of nice to see how nice the fabric is in Bloodborne. I would like that. I don't know. These both look really cool.
There's too much dirt on the clothes in Bloodborne.
When's Lords of the Fallen out?
I think that's still slated for later this year.
Okay.
But yeah, that feels like one of those ones that's going to come out swinging.
Wow. I have a feeling. I think you could be right. It could be 2023. I feel like it's going to be a 2024. The article said like that it's been in development for like 3 years or so.
Yeah, they've been doing it for a while.
Well, it got announced ages ago, yeah, like shortly after the first one. And then it was, I think it's a similar but less publicized case to Dead Island 2, where this is, you know, it's the ship of Theseus. Like, this is effectively an entirely new game. Mm-hmm. Like, the thing that was in the works has been scrapped, and this is something entirely newly developed.
Right.
But it sounds like it's been in development hell, but it hasn't been. It's just, you know, they at some point they started from scratch.
They said they've been doing a lot of, like, community feedback on it, so they've been getting people, like, in and kind of, like, looking at things and taking that feedback and adding it. So, like, hopefully they... that's only going to help better the game, because mm-hmm. they're listening to people who want to play the game and want it to be as good as possible. So, yeah.
I mean, I hope the Soulsborne audience offers, you know, better advice than behold dog or try finger butthole. Yeah. Yeah. It says here it's out October 28th, 2014.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's what happens off, yeah. when you name your game the same name as the last game you put out. That's one reason to not do that.
According to Steam, it's just sometime this year.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Very cool. Right. I'm looking forward to both of those games. Seems like a good time. Moving on. Something that came out of GDC, which was sort of a weirdly... one of those just you said the quiet part loud kind of things. Doug Rosen, who is the senior vice president for games and emerging media at Paramount Global, announced that they are making a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles: The Last Ronin game. Now, if you're unfamiliar, ooh, this is a hit graphic novel by Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird, the original creators of, you know, Ninja Turtles, the old comic, and it's pretty good. It's very much the Dark Knight Returns mm-hmm. with turtles,
mm-hmm.
which checks out because. The early Turtles, like, you know, Frank Miller's Daredevil had like the hand, and they had the Foot Clan. Like, it was very like ninjas in New York. Crazy, isn't it? And then that's what that was. In this case, it feels like kind of a mashup of Frank Miller's Ronin and The Dark Knight Returns, but with turtles. And I think it's really well suited to being a video game. They name-checked God of War specifically, saying that like they want it to be like a, you know, serious narrative, not a cash-in type of thing. They want it to be like a very good mm-hmm. narrative-driven video game. And I think it works really well because one thing that happens here, and this is, I feel like, very mild spoiler, there's only one turtle.
Which turtle is the one turtle?
So, it's revealed at the end of the first issue, and it was a surprise going into the release. But if anybody wants to go in totally cold, I won't say right
here.
I will say that this turtle wields all of the weapons of the turtles, mm-hmm. of his brothers. So that's, like, I feel like, in itself, a really good video gamey situation. If you're making a single-player thing, it's the, you know, it's the same weird inverse problem of like Gotham Knights, where like you're making a 4-player Batman game. Everybody wants to be Batman. In Ninja Turtles, you don't know which turtle you want to pick, you know, and it's mm-hmm. it's kind of, there's an inherent teamwork there. But if you get rid of three of them and have the other one kind of carrying their legacy and using their weapons, then it's kind of like, well, what color skill tree do you want to pump points into?
Yeah.
You want to work on your bow staff or your size or your nunchucks or what?
You can do this. You can do the kind of rock, paper, scissors mechanics of having, you know, quick weapon swaps to like the D-pad and, you know, like, oh, these enemies are weak to a staff. These mm-hmm. enemies are more weak to a sword. You know, that type of element can go into it, which is great. I'm about halfway through. I think I'm at the start of issue 3 for this one right now. Really digging the story. It's a little bit light.
Bebop and Rocksteady get married.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean to spoil it. That's what
Come on.
The big wedding scene.
Yeah,
it was almost a red wedding. Yeah. but no, I'm really excited for this. They also, hopefully they don't borrow this element from God of War of like if there's any like environmental puzzle solving and stuff like that, because periodically throughout the story, like, he'll kind of communicate with his dead siblings like through like kind of talking to himself, kind of like memories and stuff.
Maybe if you freeze the guy
exactly
change the water
so
pressure.
I'm hoping they don't borrow that from God of War, because I know a lot of people, even the voice actor, wasn't happy with that.
Have a video on our TikTok of Sunny, who plays Atreus, saying he was annoyed at himself playing the game
for giving himself advice.
But yeah, no, I think it's very well suited. You know, there's appearances from other side characters in the Ninja Turtles in there, so like there's right. like it's great for giving other people for this turtle to bounce off of.
Yeah, I think also just having sort of, again, this one turtle has the other turtles sort of with him in spirit. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really good excuse to have some sort of ambient dialogue,
mm-hmm.
you know, instead of having Aloy being like, I sure should pick up more rocks to make arrows. I'm climbing something. Like, instead of just having that weird
in
inner monologue. Yeah, like yeah. you have voices in your head and it makes sense in terms of the actual story. The other thing is it takes place in like a weird futuristic cyberpunk version of New York City, which is handy because nobody's like, this isn't like New York City. It's, you can get as video gamey as hell as you want with it. It's completely made up. It's totally, totally fictionalized. And that's also, it's got that level of like, because it is this sort of alternate timeline version of what's happening with turtles, you're not stuck with like, oh, they screwed it up. April's not hot enough. Oh, it's just, someone will still say that, but
somebody will.
And also, it's like there's like Robot Foot Clan and like Baxter Stockman's weird mouser variants, mm-hmm. which is so video gamey to have them get like weird reinterpreted. Whereas it's like, I don't know, if you're trying to keep it grounded, it's like how many different sort of street level punks can they fight? And mm-hmm. just how many mutants do you want to roll out?
I wonder how the like flashback scenes will go too. Will they go like really like bright and shiny New York and all the turtles are just eating pizza all the time?
In the comic, the flashback stuff is actually drawn by Kevin East, whichever one did the art in the originals. But it's basically like the old school.
Oh, really? So like the slightly more gritty...
It looks like full-on Sin City, basically. Let me see if I can find a page here. But it's
And there's like different kinds of flashbacks that pop between different periods of time. So like there's like retelling, which is like in pure like black and white and stuff like that.
Oh, so they do black and white style.
So some page, and it's cool because it jumps between artists. But like the present day is all kind of similar stuff, and then the you know there's actual flashbacks using kind of retro style.
Cool,
stuff,
sick.
Which would be kind of cool. Like I'd love to see sort of the you know the Ghost of Tsushima effect there, where it do like the Kurosawa mode for all the flashbacks.
Yeah.
You know it's black and white, so you know it's the past. I don't know.
Well, they'll go back in like Turtles in Time style flashbacks.
Yeah. As for when this game is actually coming out, Doug Rosen said that they have found the right partner to adapt The Last Ronin into an ambitious AAA video game, which...
So, 6 years.
Exactly, yeah.
And on the PS6.
PS6.
I feel like the fact that because this was a businessman muttering it at GDC and not like a massive logo over a CG trailer.
Somewhere a guy who just signed a contract or is about to sign a contract went, oh God, what did he say?
No, this is like Bob Iger dropping the names of 6 new Star Wars movies. Like it's very much like, okay, well, so much for marketing, I guess.
Somebody told me about these, you know, in my brief thing, so I'm gonna sell these to the world.
I'm cautiously optimistic. I really hope that more companies take a cue from Insomniac Spider-Man and you know the Arkham series, and it's like, oh, maybe these things don't have to be licensed cash-ins. Maybe they can be full-on, you know, proper stories using beloved characters. Just
it would
thought
be great if Embracer you know, bought all these game studios and it owns Dark Horse. It would be great to start hearing about, you know, some of the classic Dark Horse franchises being like new stories, but being made as video games.
What does Dark Horse still have?
Well, I think the big one was sort of a licensed thing, which is now all in the same boat, which is Tomb Raider, right? So any new Tomb Raider story is a sort of combination of Crystal Dynamics telling the story and it being a Dark Horse story. They're sitting on like literally hundreds of properties.
There's so many.
Yeah.
Yeah, Legacy of Kain and stuff is all under Embracer now. Yeah. There's like a lot of good classics.
I meant specifically Dark Horse. Like what are, because they used to have... You know, they used to have Star Wars, and that was their bread and butter, and then Disney scooped that back up and dumped it on Marvel. But, like, I guess they've got The Mask. They've got, like, Rusty and the Big Guy, the Boy Robot, or whatever. Big Guy and Rusty, the Boy Robot. I mean, Sin City, a video game, would be interesting as hell. Not sure how that would age or how much Frank Miller would have to say about it, but, like, something cel-shaded in that area. There's that Hellboy game coming out, which is...
Oh yeah,
big thing, which looks extremely
trying
cool.
Trying to go for like the look.
Wait,
of
is Umbrella Academy Dark Horse?
Looks like Umbrella Berserk. Berserk would be cool. I think
they can reprint it. I don't think they own the rights to it.
Resident Alien, which not everyone loves the show, but I'm a fan of anything Resident Alien.
Well, there we go. There's a bunch. Dark Horse prints a lot of comics based on a lot of stuff, but as far as what they actually own,
The Witcher?
I'm curious about
I would love to see a Witcher game.
Yeah,
Dark Horse owns
it. I think they could probably get at least like 3 games out of that. At least, maybe.
Sick,
dude.
Moving on, briefly touched on this. Sony's going to do a summer something or other. They're going to do a summer showcase. What do we actually think we're going to see? Realistically, Jada, let's start with you.
Realistically, more PSVR 2 stuff.
You think so?
I think we'll get a little bit.
Sorry, I did that out loud.
I don't think it's be on the level that they need to do for PSVR 2 to where it needs to like really kind of jumpstart the interest in this peripheral. But I do think we are going to get a snippet of like, here's some companies that are working on PSVR 2 stuff. We probably won't see anything, but we will hear that these are the companies that are contracted to make PSVR 2 games in the next 2 years.
That seems like a thing that maybe could have happened at the last showcase that would happen before the PSVR 2 launch. It's an odd time. Then again, the original PSVR 2 or VR came out, and then I remember there was 1 year at E3 where they had like something, Sony had something they were going to be unveiling on the side of the side of the convention center. There was something that was still furled up. They had all these big banners, and then they pulled it down, and it was the big yogurt covered pretzel move gun controller. VR aim controller. Alongside the Spiders on Mars game, whatever it's called. I forget. But no, I was like, I remember just like kind of camping out outside and be like, what are they going to show? It's going to be huge. And it was like, I don't know, maybe unveiling a massive peripheral alongside the actual thing itself.
That looked like something the Blue Man Group would play with, right?
Yes.
Big white sort of bendy.
It was a very...
And you stuck a move controller in it or had a move controller ball on the front of it.
You could, you literally inserted it into the front of it. Yeah.
Yeah. It looked like a shower handrail that like elderly people have with a clown nose on one end. That was a choice. I did also appreciate that it didn't look like an AR-15, which is what the previous Move aim controller looked like. I don't know.
I think we're going to see not what we want or we should see for PSVR 2, but we're going to see some kind of nod to it. More realistically, Summer Showcase is going to be dominated by Spider-Man. Last of Us multiplayer, that would probably be my two, for the summer.
Hmm. John, what about you?
What do I think they're going to do or what do I want them to do?
You can mix it up, do a little bit of both, you know. Put some sugar in that cereal, I don't know.
I used to put sugar on my Frosted Flakes. It's kind of the weirdest cereal to add sugar to, but...
Is that why you're like that?
That might be why I have to
sleep.
That might be why I don't sleep. All those bowls of Frosted Flakes with extra sugar for the first, like, 15 years of my life.
There's a bunch of studios within Sony, and we have no idea what they're doing, right? So we're not clear on what Sony Bend is doing. We don't really know what Sucker Punch is doing next. I would imagine there's another God of War, but I don't think we'll hear about it yet. I would love Ben to go back and reboot Siphon Filter. I think it's time for the resurgence of sneak 'em ups, I want Splinter Cell back from Ubisoft. Something Metal Gear-y would be great, but I think Siphon Filter was an idea that was held back by the technology at the time.
I agree.
It was a great idea. It was a great story. It looked like ass. I mean, look at it.
Oh man, I did. So I got the platinum for 1 and 2 last year during like my trophy sprints. I have 3 downloaded to save for this year's trophy sprint. But yeah, no, it's like it controlled really poorly because of just like how it was set up and like
a the total reboot of this franchise. Yes. I think could be, and it's like reintroducing it to a whole new generation of gamers. Mm-hmm. I think there was a lot of great ideas, but it was sort of ahead of its time. I think we'll see another Ghost of Tsushima game. I would love a new Sly Cooper instead.
Yeah.
Or a new Infamous. But I kind of think they're done with Infamous.
I think so too, sadly. You know, the sad thing, like you bringing up like Siphon Filter and Ubisoft bringing back Splinter Cell, like it's such a weird dynamic that like the chances are, in our industry, when one type of game comes out, the other one also comes out.
Remember, they all stopped making them because there were so many of the damn things. Yes. And everyone was like, oh, this is really played out. So everyone stopped. And now we haven't had any for 10 years.
Yes. It's like, just come on, guys. Just like, let's get in order. Like, one of you release one, and then another one release one for like 3-4 years later. Like, keep a normal, like, keep the supply chain going for these.
So. Yeah, it'd be nice to see something like that. I don't know. Siphon Filter seems... It feels like it would kind of fill in sort of a blank in Sony's catalog, you know, like there's some colorful cartoon characters. You've got like a samurai, you've got like a Norse god, you've got a woman who shoots like clock radio dinosaurs with homemade rock arrows that she, when she's done climbing stuff. Like it's kind of, we don't, there's no, There's no like kind of high tech, you know, military thing in there. You know, it feels like it would fit right in. And they, you know, they own it. I feel like the game, like that's
Splinter Cell.
Splinter Cell.
Yes.
I feel like the gameplay of Siphon Filter has aged poorly, which, you know, you can excuse that. The cover art, the like the pre-rendered CG on the box is just like, ooh, not good.
Oh, there was a lot about it, but like there was some ideas in there that were really smart, and it was like their ambition was just held back.
Yeah.
I think.
I mean, they did a train sequence before Uncharted did.
Yeah, yeah.
Like they had a decent train sequence.
They were too stealthy about it. Nobody noticed. It was too quiet. You know what you do is you get Yoji Shinkawa to redesign Splinter Cell. And not Splinter Cell, Siphon Filter. And then people are like, well, this looks like Metal Gear, feels like Metal Gear. All right. And, you know, Kojima's off making a game where Norman Reedus takes a bath or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
What is a Siphon Filter?
Siphon Filter was like a oh my goodness, like a chemical. It was like a bioterror. Yeah, weapon,
because it just reminds me of just like fluid dynamics. It's just
words.
Siphon filter.
Yeah, exactly. My plumber would recommend
it,
me,
filters the siphon out of it.
I thought about it. I was like, I'm looking at this title. I'm like, wow, it sounds really cool. And I'm like breaking down the words. I'm like, this sounds like an appliance.
Yeah, I wonder if there's anybody who works in some very like specific, like I don't know, aquarium parts. Selling things, and they just their Google search results are totally screwed up trying to find
people are searching for siphon filter.
And the developer's like the cousin, he's like, whoa, that's a cool word, and then just put it in his video game.
That's a choice. But yeah, I mean, it also it could mean anything, you know. It's it's such a strange term that you can really kind of go anywhere with that. So, you know, it could be a puzzle game about filtering siphons and siphoning filters. All the above.
Siphon Filter Simulator.
Maybe that.
Josh, what about you? What do you think we're going to see from Sony this summer?
I feel like, you know, the whole thing we're doing now is expanding classic game libraries. I think that's going to be a pretty big announcement. They'll be like, here's a bunch of new games we're adding to like the PlayStation Plus like essential thing. That seems pretty likely to me, just because I think Nintendo did that at their last Direct as well, right?
Yeah, they had
like, here's a bunch of new games we're going to be adding. And so I think it makes sense.
I think it's a good safe bet.
I hope that we get bigger stuff than all this, you know.
I would hope so, but I've been, you know, disappointed every time. Just say that.
No, that's actually a very reasonable way to approach things.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, prepare to aim low, and then maybe you'll surprise yourself by something turning out okay.
But I mean, what if there was a game that you really wanted to see in the Essential Collection? Like, maybe then you'd be excited, right?
Yeah.
Is there a game?
I mean, I'm trying to think what's on there. I don't know.
Are you talking like classic catalog?
Yeah.
I play Tokyo Jungle without having to stream it.
That would be great.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
Is that possible? I don't even know what that game is.
A whole showcase to just show off that Tokyo Jungle is now
added.
It's playable without having to stream it.
They added one game to it.
Excited.
Yeah, I mean,
this one goes out to Max Scoville. We added Tokyo Jungle. They spent 13 minutes.
A lot of people would be pretty excited about Tokyo.
No, I think that would be, to that point, though, I think it would be a huge win for Sony if they made their PS3 catalog downloadable to play without having to stream them. Because there's a lot of games in there that, you know, I just don't want to deal with streaming. Not to mention, if you're streaming it to your console, if you're, you know, trying to stream on Twitch to other people, you can't do that.
Yep.
You can't screen cap, you know, images or anything like that. You can't record gameplay on your console unless you have outside materials and stuff like that. So I think that would be a big...
We're showing gameplay of which Simpsons game is this?
Simpsons Wrestling.
That was really... Don't ever whisper wrestling to us over a loudspeaker.
But adding some, like, you know, fan favorite classics would distract everybody from being like, oh, why don't they have any big exclusives coming up? They'd be like, well, at least I can go back and play Simpsons Wrestling. Like,
I mean, I think there's a lot of older stuff that's ready for being either rebooted or remastered, they haven't touched Jack and Daxter for years.
Yep.
Like I mentioned, Sly Cooper hasn't been touched for years. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that has beloved, you know, it's beloved by fans that they've kind of walked away from.
I think one way, I mean, we know there's a Silent Hill 2 remaster coming, and we've heard all these rumors
I'm
about.
I'm really glad we're showing Pepsi Man right now.
It's
Pepsi Man.
The game that Red really wants.
Just Pepsi Man gameplay. Announced.
Yeah,
I think it's generous to even call that gameplay.
I mean, it's an endless runner.
Yeah.
Yeah, until you get tired and turn it off. I mean, we've heard all these rumors about Snake Eater getting remastered forever, like for ages. That seems like a very safe bet because of all the sort of Metal Gear games. That one kind of exists in a little corner. It works well. People love it. It's, I think objectively the best in the series. People are obviously kind of fussy about that happening without Kojima. I think bringing back David Hayter would do a lot of heavy lifting there, like having come out. And, you know, he's maybe doesn't have a whole lot of love for Kojima after getting unceremoniously cut out of Phantom Pain. But I don't know. This would be huge. And also, like, people love to be mad at Konami. People do not want to forgive Konami for doing Kojima dirty. But I feel like if this is presented alongside PlayStation, you know, there's very much a lot of association with Silent Hill 2 and with Metal Gear Solid 3 with, you know, PlayStation consoles. Like, that's a nice way of kind of like, oh, yeah. And I don't know. That'd be a cool thing to see. Just putting that out there. Just throwing it in the ether. Show us that game. I want that to be a real thing. Yeah, I don't know. It'd be weird as hell if they got somebody who wasn't David Hayter or Kiefer Sutherland to be Snake. Like, they just got some complete rando. Some
guy with a just picked up the guy off the street. Just some guy off the street. Like, hey, you're going to be Solid.
He's like a very clear, like, big boss model, but it's Quentin Flynn voicing him. So we're like, it sounds like Raiden. I don't know what's going on there. I don't want Raiden in there. No, I mean, realistically, for what Sony's showing off, I want to know. Like, I'm going to play Spider-Man 2. I'm excited about Spider-Man 2. It's going to be a really good time. I'm confident I'm going to enjoy it. However, I would like to know what makes it a PS5 game. Like, what is it doing that is new and exciting? Like, what's the big exciting...
You can go inside of buildings now.
That'd be crazy. If you can go inside of every single building in New York, dude...
The one thing I always love about Spider-Man is when he goes inside and sits down.
I mean,
endless thrill of swinging and crawling on walls. Just, no, I don't need that.
They started it with Miles, and you got to go into the bodega for like a split second, but that was pretty much it. They're like, yeah, maybe they'll expand on that, and you can go to bodegas and sign autographs as Spider-Man or as Miles. I don't know.
I mean, that's been my biggest pipe dream for any like open world
games,
to be able to enter in any building. It's like, great, I can run around any building, but let me go through it.
Yeah.
And like, I remember Assassin's Creed 3 like teased that pretty like,
you could like jump through windows.
That was sick. Like, Spider-Man could start doing that, I'm in.
Be a good time. I don't know. Again, also, like, I love Spider-Man. Spider-Man's cool, but I want that Wolverine game so badly. I'm so excited for that. I will inevitably be disappointed on some level. There's something about it. It's just going to make me. And now I'm telling myself that so that I can psych myself out, and then I'll enjoy it more because I'll be expecting to be disappointed.
Max's one like downside for Wolverine's going to be his claws aren't shiny enough. Like,
the puddles aren't realistic enough. They're not rainwater. They're blood this time. I don't know what to expect. Yeah, that's going to be interesting. But yeah, I mean, obviously Sony's like big, huge thing. I keep forgetting when Final Fantasy 16.
That is July?
End of June.
Is it end of June? Oh, it is end of June. Yeah.
So I hate to say this, but I feel like if we do get a kind of E3-centric PlayStation
showcase
or something.
That. Well, Square's doing that, I think, in that time frame because it's like right on top of the launch.
Yep.
But at this point, it's like, I feel like most people have decided if they want that or not. You know, and anybody who's sort of not feeling it, they're probably going to get convinced after launch when it gets reviews.
When everyone's talking about it.
I'm curious, but I'm also not particularly like hyped about it. I'm kind of, you know, I'll check it out. It sounds interesting, but I'm not like eager for it, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's a good way to kind of put it. Like I'm a huge Final Fantasy fan and like, I'm kind of just like whelmed by it right now. Like I'm not underwhelmed by it. Like it looks really cool. I love the DMC style combat that's coming to it, but for some reason I'm just kind of whelmed by it right now.
I'm whelmed.
We haven't mentioned the thing that I think Sony could do that would be bigger than anything, which is
Xbox.
Just show the first teaser trailer for GTA 6.
Oh.
You think that Rockstar would?
I think it's this year.
You think so?
I think the teaser is. I don't think the game is.
Yeah.
But I think the first proper acknowledgement this is coming is this year.
What do you think the logo is going to look like?
A lot like the last one.
Modeled after like a $5 bill, right? Like that's
it's gonna look basically. Like a $6 bill.
Yeah. Yes. Crispy $6 bill.
Yeah. Which is it's just like a five with a one glued to it. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, whichever first party gets to roll that out as part of a showcase
wins.
Exerts a lot of influence, right? Like, it's not going to be, I mean, there's going to be no exclusivity whatsoever, but like, there's that just association. And like, if Sony's smart, it'll be,
do it with us.
I mean, Rockstar has always been tight with Sony. Like, I remember being actually surprised when I saw a preview for GTA 5 that it was running on a PlayStation, which seemed odd because at that point, basically every preview event you'd go to was 360.
Yeah.
And it was surprising. But yeah, we did hear about, was it the GTA Online had the, you got like a million free dollars a month.
There's a bunch of free stuff on
there. Yeah. So, I mean, then again, I don't know. I feel like Rockstar's too big for that. I feel like they
may go on their own, but I think that would be right now, given that there's not much visibility into what's next for PlayStation. I think of the third party stuff, the biggest noise Sony could make would be, and you know, this something first on PS5 with GTA.
I could see Rockstar to that point, like kind of doing their own thing first, and then Sony's like press conference being like a day or two later, and it's like, here's it on the PS5 with like, and here's all the stuff you're gonna get in the PS5 version or something like that, like bonus.
We're just writing our Christmas list to Santa Claus right now. This is just getting too
this is how you can make June and July really exciting.
I mean, we're still in that mindset. It's that muscle memory of like expecting things to happen around E3, and things are still happening around E3, but it's also I think Rockstar is well aware that they don't need to play by those rules. I mean, Red Dead Redemption, they were like, they put up a graphic that was like a cowboy hat or something, and it was like, tune in on September something or other. And then
That red thing with just the silhouettes, remember?
Yeah,
and that was it.
Yeah. And I don't know. They gave us some like blankets that had that on it or whatever, but yeah. Do something with Bully. Do something. Put Bully out there.
Remaster it would be great.
No, but they're clearly busy with GTA 6. But I feel like that's going to be a JPEG first, and then it's going to be a date, and then we're going to all line up, and then we're going to see a trailer that we'll pick apart for 6 months, and then hopefully it'll come out shortly after that. I don't know. It's such a weird time. I mean, Sony has been also very tight with Epic on Unreal 5. Mm-hmm. Like, there's been a lot of kind of tech showcases sort of side by side with that. So maybe we'll get like a proper reveal of something that's been teased that's running on that. Maybe it'll be, maybe Lords of the Fallen, something like that.
Well, I mean, I can't remember the name of the studio, but Ueda's studio signed with Epic for, you know, the next, what would have been Team Eco game, what they call Gen Engine or whatever they're called now.
Yeah.
But yeah, they, back in 2018, I think, they announced that they were publishing through Epic. So there's that too. There could be, you know, the whatever the successor to Shadow of the Colossus and Eco and Last Guardian.
Yeah. Starting, yeah.
Gen Design.
That's
this
it.
This was, that was about 3 years ago.
Yeah.
That I they mean, signed so that deal. Just so
potentially we may get a tease of something from them this year.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's exciting. I mean, I hope. It could not be exciting. Who knows? I'm curious. If you can't be excited, be curious. Now, one thing that I actually, no, wait, we totally didn't touch on The Last of Us multiplayer. That's The Last of Us multiplayer. Yeah, it's got to happen. That's good. We've seen what, like, we've seen like two JPEGs from that. We've seen the concept art, but it's a known thing, sort of.
Yeah, and they think they made a claim, like it's the biggest thing that the Naughty Dog has done or something like that. They said something along those lines.
It's going to be like The Division.
I hope not. I like Division, but like, I don't want that in my Last of Us. Yeah. So I don't want bullet sponges. I don't know. I think if they take what they did with factions in the original Last of Us, and they just deepen that experience, maybe add to where they do like Fortnite or Apex does, and they have these like stories that are that are added into this multiplayer experience that you can experience simultaneously while playing. I think that can be, I think that's the right route for them to go, because Last of Us is a very narrative driven game. So it would make no sense for them to not include some sort of narrative addition of showcasing other characters in the world at different periods of time, or, you know, spotlighting different characters we haven't seen yet, or just, you know, adding new characters into that universe for us to just kind of experience and enjoy.
Oh, I think it's going to be totally the other direction. I think the key thing that's happened since The Last of Us factions first came out is the rise of survival games. Like, I think Rust, for instance, is a big one. I don't think it's going to be the same deal of just like having to gather stuff and craft it, but like DayZ was just coming out when factions popped up.
Kind of more like State of Decay or something like that.
I think
where you're building a stronghold and defending it, and
maybe less like overt building, but I think it's also going to have a much broader scope. You know, because The Last of Us, you know, just in terms of the scale of the game, like Last of Us Part 2 is much wider, and people also, I think, come to expect that, like seeing a game that has like a multiplayer game that has sort of small, compact levels is not really, not so much a thing anymore, you know?
Yeah.
It's uncommon.
You think we're going to have like a map that's like a good chunk of like the US and like it's just like open world? And
I don't think it's
going to
be that big. Maybe a corner of Seattle. I don't know. Mm-hmm. The war for Pike.
That's why I was thinking, you know? Division, like that kind of structure where it's like you're wandering around in a group and it's kind of instanced within the world that way. Mm-hmm. I could see them doing.
That would be gnarly if it was like that, but with the really kind of just brutal combat of Last of Us.
I could see that, but like that style with Division. Yeah. Yes, I could see that. I enjoy that.
But not the bullet spongy type of thing.
Yeah, I see. Man, that's hard. Yeah, like it's just because the studio, they only do these contained single player things. Like I can't even imagine it really right now.
It's hard to picture.
Yeah, I'm very interested. I just find it funny that they've only been showing concept art. And like, as if they were like, Sony's like, you gotta show something, and they're like, fine, here's this. Like,
here's
you don't know anything else
on
about
a building.
It. Yeah, I want to know more about it, but it's crazy that we've been known about it for so long, and just don't know anything really.
The concept art being shown off officially, I think it's one thing if it gets leaked or they put it in a picture frame in The Last of Us Part Two or whatever. But it's just it kind of bugs me when it's like someone gets up on a stage to show off like a JPEG. It's just.
Yeah.
It's cool. It's a cool JPEG.
I mean, coming from like a standpoint of us at IGN, it's like we got to use this image every time we talk about it. Come on, just give us a logo.
In San Francisco?
Is that the Bay Bridge?
Looks like it, yeah.
It's a palm tree. I should know this. We like live here, you know.
It could be.
It could be
the Bay Bridge.
Yeah, it could be the Brooklyn palm tree.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Red.
Thank you.
Is that the Bay Bridge?
I don't think so.
I don't know.
Well, anyway, no one knows what bridge that is. We should know more about bridge. I feel like this picture's been out for like a year and a half. Like, we know what this
picture
is.
Nobody tried to figure out which city this was.
Nobody noticed the bridge. It's weird. We're the first ones to pick that
up. Oh, wow. Yeah.
But no, I mean, it is weird to show off just it's concept art that says a lot. Like, it's not like vague. It's not like a, tormented looking Ellie with a guitar. Like, it's not like a, it's not, it's not a, it's not, it doesn't set a tone. It really kind of sets expectation for action. Like,
and
it's
scale.
Kind of. Yeah.
Like, this is kind of a full city sort of scale. And
yeah.
Like,
I think you're trying to get through the city to find out what bridge that is. You don't know what the bridge is. You're going to find out.
What city are we in?
Yeah. What's this city? That's always the big challenge when you go to a city is finding out what its name is, you know? All the street signs, they say the names of the streets on them. You can't figure out what the city is. Anyway. I don't know. I'm very excited to hear more of that. I don't know if it'll click, you know? Like, I feel like... I remember Adam Sessler getting specifically weirded out by The Last of Us having multiplayer. Because the single-player campaign, the story is, like, such a gut punch. Like, it's so so impactful narratively. And then it's like, all right, buddy up with your team and go kick some ass.
It sort of trivializes the emotional kind of weight of it when it's like, now just run around and shoot stuff.
Yeah, it's a weird move. I mean, people still loved it. Like, it really, you know... I appreciate that it also wasn't just boilerplate multiplayer. Like, it did its own thing, which I think Naughty Dog is good at by identifying, like, you know, we're not going to make a multiplayer thing unless there's something there for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is cool. And, you know, I'm just dying to find out what that bridge is.
A lot of people are saying online that it's the Golden Gate Bridge, which I don't think it is. I know.
That's definitely not
a bunch of outlets are saying this game is set in San Francisco because you can see the Golden Gate Bridge in the background. And I'm like, you been to San Francisco?
There's a palm. Maybe it's a. It's maybe not, it's like the.
Bridge is red.
Exactly.
It's maybe like, it's the Los Angeles Bridge.
Ah, yes.
You know,
famous Los Angeles,
which they built after.
Bridge.
Well, I mean, LA. I mean, we all know LA's an island, so right, right.
Yep. Anyway, on that note, I think we're going to wrap things up. But thank you all for joining me and sharing weird E3 memories. And I someday hope to hear Dave Grohl sing the Parappa song.
Yeah.
But, on that note, special.
Got a campaign for that.
Yeah. Beyond.
Beyond.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.